This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome to the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast with me, Tom Bushell. Happy World Techie Day. Apparently, today, October the 3rd, is World Techie Day, and we're celebrating it with Kevin Sebastian, a tech journo and all-round gadget geek. Pulmonologist Dr. Masood Ali of MediClinic answers all of your questions about lung health, the flu, allergies, and more. And snakes. Some people have reported seeing snakes in their backyard and on the beaches around the UAE. We get some advice from Dr. Sarah Elliott of the British Veterinary Clinic on what to do when you spot one. Also, I chat to Stuart Camden, founder of Camden Bureau, who is making furniture out of Jaguars and other cars. Pretty cool. Enjoy the podcast. Afternoons with Helen Farmer is live weekdays from 2 till 5.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Today is World Techie Day, celebrating the best gadgets and tech around the world. And to celebrate with us, Kevin Sebastian, a tech journalist, is on the line with us. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Happy World Techie Day.
Thank you. It's pretty nice to be having it recognized for our love for technology.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a big part of our lives these days, isn't it? If you have any questions regarding gadgets, tech, whatever it may be, you can get in touch on 4001 or via the ARM Play app. Or you can call us on 0487 55 00. So, Kevin, I think we're going to start because it is World Techie Day.
Yes.
We sort of want to have a quick discussion. Please do get in touch as well on the SMS. What do you think is the best gadget ever invented?
I had to give it some thought, but I think the undisputable answer is the smartphone. The modern day smartphone is the best gadget that humanity as a whole has ever had.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's such an important part of our lives. But you wouldn't go a little bit before that with the sort of, the Nokia, if you like, phones with Snake. The game Snake, I think, was amazing. It was.
I was giving it a bit of thought because my initial thought was the telephone, the Alexander Graham Bell's invention.
Yeah.
But the smartphone really, truly changed the game because the smartphone basically put a computer in our pockets.
Yeah.
And I think that is what it is. Because right now, if you think about it, people could do without a telephone back in the day. But right now, if you don't have a smartphone, and in fact, there is a smartphone for every category, for everybody at every price point. So if you don't have a smartphone, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah.
For the communication that everybody else has. And that's why I truly firmly believe that's what it is.
Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it? The amount of people that have smartphones as well. And it's hard to look past a smartphone as the best gadget ever invented. If you have any thoughts, 4001, let us know on the SMS. Zina, I know you have one.
I have one. It's a kitchen appliance, actually. It's the air fryer. Can you imagine having crispy fried chicken without any of the added oil?
Yeah, no, air fryer. No, when you told me that off air, I did think you said hair dryer, which again, I think is a good invention, isn't it?
I can live without that.
Yeah, air fryer, though. Yeah, they're very good, aren't they? Very healthy.
They are very healthy.
Quite well priced as well, I think.
Yes, so if you don't own an oven, you don't like frying stuff, you know, it's the price point can go between 800 and maybe 3,000. Not bad.
Yeah. No, well worth
absolutely,
having,
yeah.
Well
worth the Philips air fryer in particular.
Best gadgets ever invented, we're talking about because it is World Techie Day, 4001. I mean, it doesn't have to be. We sort of think tech, don't we, as new and modern. But, I mean, going back, you know, the light bulb was tech, you know, back in its day. Go as far back as you wish. What do you think? 4001. Kevin, what are the sort of biggest stories which we can discuss over the next 40 minutes or so in the world of tech at the moment? Obviously, a new iPhone launched recently, hasn't it? Was it the 13 or something?
Yes, the iPhone 13 has been launched. Basically, it's a very incremental upgrade. If you have an iPhone 12, I wouldn't recommend buying it, but if you have something like the iPhone 11 or 10, it definitely is a worthy upgrade because there's certainly a lot of features that Apple have put on. In fact, for even like if you don't need an iPhone 13 Pro, you get the best of features from the iPhone 12 Pro Max for the regular iPhone 13, which is pretty good for the camera as well. So there's a lot to unpack when it comes to what Apple are doing right now, because they're really playing the long game here when it comes to releasing these phones as well. Because one of the things to consider is that there is a global silicon shortage happening right now. So a lot of the parts to build these things are getting more and more expensive. So Apple has a significant challenge to basically build these, but also maintain them at the cost of the consumer. So definitely the iPhone 13, it's a really stunning device because it has beautiful colors that are coming with it. I particularly love the product red. And I honestly think that I just wish that it came for the iPhone 13 Pro Max, actually. What doesn't kill
you makes you stronger. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back. This is Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farmer. Kevin Sebastian is on the line with us this hour to celebrate World Techie Day. We're talking all things tech and gadgets. I know, Kevin, you're reviewing a couple of items at the moment. Tell us about them.
So the thing is, like right now, a lot of things that are happening in the world of tech are in gaming. Esports in particular is a massive industry here, one that the UAE, in fact, is investing a lot of money into as well. So Razer as a company, Razer is a gaming company, but they're so much more than that now. They started out making mice and keyboard, of which I think, since I'm on Teams, you can probably see like everything's all flash and lighty right now on my system. So one of the latest products I've been having is called the Razer Basilisk V3. It's Razer have named their products after snakes. So they have this very, very cute and funny way of naming their products, but they've named them all after various kinds of snakes, actually.
Okay.
And the Basilisk V3 in particular is a gaming mouse, but it's more so much more than that, because one of the things to consider about when you're reviewing a mouse like this, it's also the fact that most of these people who are gaming are also heavily into the workforce as well. These are people in the creative industry who use this kind of a mouse. I had this mouse for a couple of weeks now, and basically I can say that it's one of the best products that the company's ever produced. It's really great for gaming, but also because it has 11 buttons on it, so you can program them to do various different things, and it looks pretty nice as well on top of that. In fact, I put up a picture on Twitter right now to show people what the mouse looks like, and it's ergonomically made in such a way that where you don't actually get your hands cramped when you're having long sessions with it.
Wow. I mean, it sounds amazing. And as you say, if you are a gamer, something to really think about. Second on your list that you're reviewing at the moment.
Yeah, so another thing that I had on my list as well, like, is another, well, it's a gaming-focused product, but it's so much more than that again. Kingston, it has basically changed their entire strategy now, because as we all know, HP acquired another gaming company called HyperX. So HyperX used to belong to Kingston at one point, and then what happened was Kingston moved all of their memory into another company on its own. It's basically all Kingston memory. They've basically sent me something called the Fury Renegade, which is these are RAM sticks. So RAM sticks are basically something you put into your PC to optimize the memory, and these are for high-end desktops and workstation machines. Now, I've had the 32 GB memory for this PC that I've been running on right now, and suffice to say, to put it in consumer terms, when I loaded up Windows, I loaded it up in less than 10 seconds. So I have a very high-end PC, and I'm very used to having my Windows boot up in about 15 or 20 seconds. That's considered normal for me, but when I plug these in, they really optimize the memory to such a degree that my Windows comes, like, in a snap of my finger, it's ready to go.
That's good. So they're the two gadgets you're reviewing at the moment.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, this is Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farmer today. Right now, we're celebrating World Techie Day, and we have Kevin Anderson on the line with us, a tech journalist. And, well, there's lots going on in the world of tech at the moment. One of the big stories is Amazon's Astro, Kevin. Amazing piece of technology. It's essentially a robot which helps you out around your house, but hang on, I have just realized that Kevin Anderson is he's a tech guru, and he's fallen, the line's gone, hasn't he?
Oh, he's gosh.
Yeah. No, I'm very much here.
Oh, no, he's not. All right. No, you are there. Sorry, Kevin. I'm getting... See, what's happened there is I'm getting confused by technology. around me. So I shouldn't be celebrating World Techie Day. Right, I'll get back to where I was. Amazon's Astro, yeah. Kevin. Amazing, isn't it? It is a robot which essentially can help you out around the house. But there are concerns of privacy and what it's the data it's collecting from you.
So I have discussed this with many of the hosts on Dubai as well, because a lot of people have actually asked me about my opinion on this. So this is very Black Mirror, I have to emphasize on. Like, we've seen this happen. Netflix has already future shown us like exactly what's going to happen when you have a piece of tech product from a multi-billion dollar company that's obviously benefiting off data harvesting. Now, here's two sides to that story. We also know that Tesla has also announced another one of their own robots. It's called the Tesla Bot. In fact, Tesla went on to say that the robot can't go for more than 5 kilometers an hour in speed in terms of walking. And they basically said that's for a safety measure. So a lot of people are concerned about bringing in artificial intelligence into the household. Now, the Amazon Astro in particular looks kind of like what Wall-E, the robot from the Disney franchise, Pixar franchise, sorry, would basically look like. It's basically supposed to be a robot that is more or less under terms of surveillance to make sure it could keep an eye on your elderly parents and your pets and your children. It's also basically used to more or less video conference as well.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest fear really is that how will Amazon treat this product in terms of how it collects your data? We all know that Amazon Alexa does this. We are already using Alexa to control most of our smart lights, my house included. I have it linked up to my smart light software. But how much information is going to be sent out? That's a question that Amazon need to answer. And truth be told, it's a very simple philosophy that I have. If you have a tech product that is used to basically take data based on your suggestions, understand that at some point it will unconsciously, to you, take data based on a lot of things as well, unless and until specified, because this is a very, very known and unknown thing at this point, because we're entering a brand new world of silent advertising.
Yeah, indeed. Amazing technology, isn't it? But as you say, we just need to be careful about how amazing and how clever they become. YouTube is to remove all anti-vaccine misinformation on its platform. Tell us more about that.
So here's the thing that I finally stand on. I'm pretty glad that YouTube's finally taking a stand on this, because I know that they're very open about the kind of content that they put up in there. But one of the things that was really bothering a lot of people as well is because we are now living during a pandemic where people need to get their vaccines. It cannot be stated enough that this is something that you should not second guess at all. This is for everyone's health and safety, and it needs to be done. The faster this is done, the better and more quicker we get out of this as well. Now, there are a lot of people who are profiting off misinformation by putting up alternate takes, explanations, and that sort of thing, which gets in the views and the ad revenue as well. And YouTube as a platform could stand to get heavily fined if that they keep those standing up as well. In fact, I'm pretty much willing to go about on the limb and say this. I was personally attacked by an anti-vaxxer as well, posting the fact that I got vaccinated. And they went on to basically put my pictures somewhere else on an anti-vax board. And I've been like targeted with several abuse as well. These videos spreading can cause a lot of harm. Like, it cannot be understated that innocent people and scientists and doctors will get roped in into things that should normally not defy common sense. But here we are. We are now living in a new age where a lot of people who may be sounding like quacks get to have their own platform on this. And I'm kind of glad that YouTube has taken a stand on that.
Yeah, absolutely. The right thing to do there. You mentioned Tesla earlier, but one more story with Tesla. They've sold nearly 250,000 cars in the third quarter, while other automakers saw massive drops. How's that happened?
So here's another thing about Tesla. They are disrupting the automotive industry. This is more of a slowly but surely move that we're going to see. We're going to see more and more electric cars become cheaper and more affordable. And in fact, this is something that all automakers should now invest in. I know that Toyota and Nissan are all starting to make electric cars as well. But the fact that we're seeing 241,300 cars being sold by Tesla while other automakers are seeing big drops is because the global infrastructure is such that people are moving away from fuel cars, which is pretty good now, because right now in our current state right now, we can't obviously implement that globally right now, because EVs are still pretty much expensive. I think the Teslas can go anywhere between $100,000 to $200,000 per car, which is still not viable for someone like a family who's still up in the developing world as well. But given the next 20, 30 years, when we are obviously mobilizing for bracing for climate change as we speak, I think more and more people are going to get to adopt them. And now General Motors, the company that's obviously saying that they didn't sell too well, they have to be forced to basically make EVs now.
Yeah. Now, it's amazing how many Teslas you see on the roads these days compared to a couple of years ago. Zina, I know we have some SMSs coming in, people needing insights from Kevin or his opinion, at least, on certain things.
Exactly. So, Kevin, are you ready? Have you had your coffee today?
Let's do it.
Okay. So here's one from Ramsey. Hey, Kevin, thinking of buying Bang & Olufsen H95 headphones. Not cheap, but promising. What do you think? I just Googled it. It's £700 in the UK. Very pricey. What do you think, Kevin?
It is. It's $849. Very quick question would be, like, do you want to buy expensive headphones? That's the thing. So the Beoplay H95 is an amazing headphone. I had a chance to try it at the store when I went there last just to check it out. Obviously, I am not investing a lot into headphones, but the headphones that are within the reach of consumers is something I can talk about. Now, Sony and Bose, both very fantastic companies, have had their respective products, which are priced anywhere between 1,000 and 2,000 dirhams for high-end audio. The only reason why you would spend about $850 on adaptive ANC headphones is because you want to have the luxury that comes with it. Now, if you're prepared to have that, you'll enjoy it. But there are way more cheaper alternatives that give still as good as a quality of sound.
I guess Ramsey can afford that because, you know, he's been Googling it. Not against Mac, but I want a good non-Mac laptop that I can use for editing videos for both Insta and YouTube. Nothing over 4,000 dirhams, please. Thanks. That's from Arnold. I'm guessing Arnold is a budding content creator. What do you recommend for Arnold, Kevin?
As luck would have had it, I recently just finished reviewing a laptop that I personally thought was phenomenal. It's on my personal recommended list. It's the Asus Vivobook K513. That's the exact model. It's an OLED laptop model, and it comes for, I believe, $3,199. You can find it for cheaper on Amazon as well. But I do think that if you want to find a bit of more choice, the HP Spectre X360 is also for $3,619, and the Lenovo Yoga Slim is for $3,799, all under the 4,000 dirham budget. You just need a laptop for like 3,500 dirhams, and they will be able to help you edit videos for both the platforms that you just set up.
Amazing insights, Kevin. Thank you for your time this afternoon to celebrate World Techies Day with us.
Always. I'm always happy to celebrate, and this is the best way to celebrate right now.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Kevin. Have a good rest of your day today.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, we're kicking off the show with an on-air clinic today. Our medical expert for today is Dr. Masood Ali, a pulmonologist at MediClinic. He treats conditions such as acute and chronic cough, airway disease, lung cancer as well. He is also experienced in assessing and managing patients with sleep-related complaints. Dr. Ali, thank you for being with us today. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm very well, Tom.
Good, good, good. And how are things at MediClinic today?
MediClinic, as usual, is busy, but we are coping well.
It's for doctors, it really has been a very, very busy time, hasn't it?
It has been.
What are some of your patients' most common concerns of late, if you like? Obviously, there's a lot of anxiousness out there. There's a lot of topics and talk of, I don't feel great, whatever's causing that. What is the most common concerns that you've come across recently?
Yeah, I think being a pulmonologist and dealing with lung disorders, one of the common complaints we come across, and we still do that, is acute and chronic cough. So people who are coughing for a short or long duration. In addition to that, of course, COVID hasn't gone anywhere yet, although numbers are going down, but we're still seeing patients with post-COVID symptoms. And yeah, and the other issues we're seeing, especially post-COVID, is breathing difficulties, being a pulmonologist, which may or may not be related to any structural damage to lungs. So it's a number of different things we are seeing. And part of it, as you would expect, is related to COVID and post-COVID problems.
Absolutely. Of course, with it being so prominent in our minds, you know, normally if you have a cough for a couple of days, you sort of get on with it. But now you think, right, I better have this checked out.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So any cough which persists more than 2 weeks, it's better to get it checked to see what's going on.
Absolutely. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. This is
Afternoons with Helen Farmer. Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back. Hello, this is Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farmer today. Seen it alongside me in the studio as well. And of course, it is the on-air clinic, which we do every Sunday. Dr. Masood Ali is on the line with us until 3 o'clock. Dr. Ali, let's talk about the flu shot then, because health authorities are advocating for it. There is a nationwide influenza awareness drive happening right now. Why is the flu shot more important than ever?
Yes, absolutely. Flu or influenza is an acute respiratory infection which is caused by influenza viruses. And we see approximately 3 to 5 million cases of severe illnesses worldwide every year. And approximately 650,000 people die worldwide every year with flu. So it's a pretty severe illness in some high-risk group patients. The best way of preventing flu is by vaccination. Okay, and vaccinations are given every year, usually from September onwards. Flu virus is, or viruses, I should say, there are a number of different flu viruses, influenza A, influenza B, C, and D. But most human infections are caused by influenza A or B viruses. Now, influenza A viruses, typically they cause more severe illness than influenza B. Just to give you some examples, H1N1, H3N2, these are influenza viruses. So some of these viruses will cause more severe illness. So what happens every year, WHO sits down and they decide or they predict what kind of virus is going to circulate in the next flu season. And based on then that, they recommend what components should be included in the influenza virus for a vaccine for that year.
It's a good point, that isn't it? Because I know with the, you know, I think a lot of people, me included, would think the flu vaccine is just the same year in, year out. But in actual fact, every year it's modified just to be able to cope with a slightly different strain of virus.
Absolutely, you're right, and it may be the same vaccine as was the case before, but it all depends on what the prediction for that particular year is, and what strains are going to circulate, as you said, and that's why it's absolutely vital to consider flu vaccine every year. Now, there are some groups of people who are at high risk of influenza infection. So they're more likely to develop a severe disease and they're more likely to develop complications. And those usually include people who are very young, so children who are 6 months to 5 years, let's say, elderly individuals beyond 65 years of age. Pregnant women are at particular risk at any stage of their pregnancy. There are some people with chronic conditions, which may include chronic lung conditions, heart conditions, kidney problems, diabetes, people whose immunity is not that great because of an underlying disease or because of the medicines they might be taking. And of course, the healthcare workers is a big high-risk group as well.
Yeah.
So these are the people we should be focused on and getting them vaccinated.
And we talk about the flu vaccine being modified and adjusted year on year just to match with the slightly different strain of flu which is coming our way. Now, this is obviously an interesting conversation where we are now all being vaccinated against COVID-19. Do you think essentially the COVID-19 vaccine will, in the years to come, basically be part of a flu vaccine, which we, you know, more of us will get, just to make sure that we stay clear of it.
Well, there's one thing which is clear. COVID-19 vaccine or any COVID vaccine does not prevent flu and vice versa. Mm. These are two different strains of viruses. COVID is caused by a strain called coronavirus, whereas influenza virus is a different strain of virus. So these viruses, these vaccines, they will be protective against their own particular strain, but not the each other. The potential issue we might be facing soon is that if you look at the incidence of influenza in last year or so, it has gone down. And there are a number of reasons for that. Maybe we've been following very strict the general precautions, social distancing, hand hygiene, masks, schools have been closed, you know, people are working from home. So we've seen less and less people with flu in the last couple of seasons. That means those people haven't had developed that immunity which you would normally do after having an infection. And therefore, it is possible that they are at high risk of getting flu as the COVID 19 going down and the restrictions are being eased off.
Hence the importance and this nationwide campaign, awareness campaign drive to ask people to get that flu vaccine this year, which is why it's more important than ever.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And this is Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farmer this Sunday afternoon. This hour it is, of course, the on-air clinic. And we are joined by Dr. Masood Ali, a pulmonologist from MediClinic. And we were talking just a few minutes ago, Dr. Ali, how the sort of the traditional flu season and people getting infected with the flu is certainly gone down. And it's all due to us obviously being a lot more careful in terms of social distancing and masks on, not being in schools as much, etc. So that's why there really is that important message at the moment of that message of go to get your flu vaccine. So that in case that starts to rise up again.
Yes, absolutely. I'm still here.
I thought I'd lost you for a second.
Yeah, no, and you've pointed it very well indeed. So what I would like to say here is vaccines are very, very safe and effective. Okay.
Yeah.
We've been using flu vaccines for almost 60 years now. A flu vaccine is an inactivated virus. So it's good enough to trigger an immune response in our body. So it leads to production of antibodies from various white cells in our blood against the flu virus. But it does not actually cause flu itself. So it's an inactivated virus. And it's pretty safe. It's pretty effective. The main benefit of getting vaccination is to prevent you having severe illness. Okay, and when I say severe illness, that means people end up in hospital or they end up with complications like pneumonia and sometimes, unfortunately, death. And that's where the flu shots come. They prevent you having severe illness. And they prevent you having flu to some extent, of course, and that will lead to reduction in you, your chances of passing flu to others as well. So the multiple benefits, again, in particular in the high-risk healthcare group, high-risk patients, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, research coming out of the University of Oxford as well says that people who catch the flu could have prolonged symptoms that are very similar to those patients with long COVID. Now, long COVID is very much a conversation at the moment. It's not a case of continually testing positive for COVID-19, is it? But it is a case of those symptoms hanging around for a little longer than they should.
Absolutely, you're right. Yeah, so long COVID means that your symptoms can persist beyond 4 weeks after having an infection. It does not mean that you're still positive either by PCR or by any other test. Mm. Unfortunately, it's a relatively common problem. Approximately half of the patients who have had COVID infection, they will carry on having some sort of symptoms beyond 4 weeks. And in some people, it can go to a few months to a year. We're still learning about this disease. Whether it's going to be the symptoms going to persist more than a year, we don't know yet. The study you are referring to is a very nice study which was published last week, and they have looked at, mainly they wanted to look at the prevalence of symptoms related to COVID within the 6 months after having COVID. So they looked at electronic health records of U.S. patients who have had COVID, and they looked at around over 273,000 patients. And interestingly, they had a matched cohort of patients who had influenza. Okay, so they had flu, and in that cohort, there were over approximately 114,000 patients. Now, the whole idea of the study, as I said, was to look at the long COVID symptoms, and they looked at a number of different symptoms ranging from abnormal breathing to fatigue to chest pain, headache, abdominal symptoms, taste disturbances, cognitive impairment, what we call as brain fog sometime. Yeah. And what they found that 57% of people, they had one or more of these symptoms during that 6 months after having COVID. And when they looked at the, when they took the initial 3 months off, so when they looked at 3 months to 6 months period, there were still 36% of patients who had one or more of these symptoms. Now, interestingly, looking at the flu population from that study, there were some almost half of the patients who still have had symptoms following the flu, which persisted up to 6 months. Yeah. So yes, to some extent, having a general kind of viral illness will be the contributing symptoms, will be the contributing factor for these symptoms. But COVID seems to be somewhat unique, and there seems to be some other mechanism by which COVID leads to persistent of these symptoms more than just flu.
Dr. Ali, we of course welcome questions on 4001, and I know we have some really keen to get your insight. So, Sina, we have quite a few, well, a lot, don't we? But what should we start with?
Okay, let's start with this good uncle or auntie who's asking on behalf of their niece. My niece, 2 weeks old, often has a blocked nose. Can we use humidifiers in her room? Dr. Ali?
Yes, I don't see a particular problem in using a humidifier. However, I'm not a pediatrician, and I'm an adult pulmonologist. But whatever I know, I don't see any harm. However, what I would recommend, getting her seen by a medical professional, getting her assessed for any nasal disease, anything like, let's say, polyps in the nose. Sometimes there are other coexisting diseases like having large tonsils or adenoids in young children. So I would recommend having a proper clinical assessment to see what's the reason for her symptoms. But as far as humidifier use is concerned, I don't see any particular harm in that case.
Thanks for that, Dr. Ali. You've got another question also about a blocked nose from Francesca. I've been struggling to breathe at bedtime, waking up multiple times to clear my nose. There's mucus buildup, so I use a spray. It gives me relief for a short while, and then I have to spray again. My husband says I make a whistling sound when I sleep, as if I'm trying to clear my nose. It's been this way for 2 weeks now. I can't keep using Otrivin, which is the nasal spray. What is the problem? How do I treat it? And FYI, I had COVID in January and have since recovered well. Thank you. That's from Francesca. Dr. Masood?
Thank you. So there are a number of reasons why one can have nasal symptoms, and that can include allergic rhinitis. First thing is to find out whether you have some kind of nasal allergy which is triggering your symptoms. There are other forms of rhinitis as well. When I say rhinitis, that means inflammation of the lining of the nose. And there are a number of reasons. As I said, one is allergy. Some people, they have what we call as vasomotor rhinitis, in which the there are changes in the blood vessels within the nasal lining. Sometimes there are other reasons of nasal obstruction, like a deviated septum, let's say. And again, first of all, it comes down to finding out what is the contributory factor in your particular case. Now, as far as using Otrivine, it's definitely not recommended for long-term use. It's a very strong nasal decongestant. So when you use it, what it does, it just constricts all your blood vessels within the nose. And that's how you have immediate relief and you feel you're able to breathe very well through your nose. The long-term use is not recommended because you can have pretty nasty side effects from it, which can include a condition which we call as rhinitis medicamentosa, which means you get nasal inflammation because of the medicine use itself. Every now and then, if you have a bit of nasal obstruction because of congestion, yes, it's fine to use that. So again, I would again say that you just need to get your nose assessed properly and see what's the underlying disease there, which we can address in a more specific way, let's say.
Dr. Masood, thank you so much. We will, excuse me, all this talking of breathing and coughing, I've now got a cough.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good afternoon. This is Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farman. Okay, we have more texts to get through with Dr. Masood. Thank you for being with us today, Doctor. Obviously, it's an hour out of your time to be with us for our on-air clinic. And just a couple more texts to run through with you. Here's one. I'm severely allergic to dust. This is Ayush, and I sneeze all the time. It makes it hard for me to clean around the house. Hang on, this just sounds like an excuse to me, to be honest. It just sounds like, I've heard this before.
Do your chores.
It's winter. I'm only joking, Ayush. It's winter, pollen season as well, so it will be difficult to breathe. Basically, just sneezing all of the time. He's asking, would a humidifier be helpful, or is it good to invest in a filtration system? What's your advice, Dr. Masood?
Yeah, thank you. So dust allergy, any kind of allergy, the best treatment for that is avoiding the trigger for it, whether it's dust or anything else. Sometimes it may not be necessarily possible, but as much as you can, you should avoid it. So that means going out when there is a sandstorm or the dusty weather and all that. Mm. Within the house, you can use some protective measures like using a filtration mask while you're doing your household chores. Now, the humidifier as such, I don't think it will be of much benefit as far as the allergy is concerned, because you will need proper treatment for allergy in the forms of some anti-allergy medications, which may include tablets and sometimes nasal sprays as well. So avoiding the trigger and considering some medications depending on your symptoms is the way forward.
Indeed, perfect. Zina, one more I think we've got time for.
Yes, we've got Afia who texted in. She's also a sneezer. I experience long bouts of sneezing and allergies. Antihistamines and nasal sprays don't work long enough. What are the alternatives?
So the alternative would be to see an allergy specialist. They will do some specialist tests on you. And there are some more specialist forms of treatment available, which is called desensitization. So it depends on what you are allergic to in particular, and then targeting that form of allergy by some more kind of specialist medications.
Dr. Masood Ali, a pulmonologist at MediClinic. Once again, thank you so much for your time today. We wish you well for the rest of the day and the rest of the week.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, really helpful to get your insights on those questions today and just in general about that campaign to go out and get the flu vaccine as well, which is happening around the UAE at the moment. So thank you so much, Dr. Masood.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Let's talk snakes, because apparently there's lots of them in Dubai. There's been a fair few sightings of late, Zina. Have you seen any yourself?
No, but I've been getting lots of messages and people sending me pictures of the snakes they've seen. So there seem to be a lot of them making an appearance around town.
Seems to be in people's gardens, some even on the beach. Joining us live on the phone is Dr. Sarah Elliott. She is the founder and veterinary director at the British Veterinary Hospital here in Dubai. Good afternoon, Dr. Sarah.
Hi, good afternoon.
So as you have just heard us describing snakes in Dubai, we feel like it's quite a rare thing for us here. But talk to us about this. Is this something that actually is quite common? We just haven't seen them before.
I think it's commoner than we like to believe.
Yes.
It's one of those things that I think, you know, we've encroached with all the building work on the snake's environment. So the snakes move further out, and then we ended up with COVID and the snakes, because we're all quiet as humans and stayed in our little houses, the snakes came back. So we're seeing snakes in closer proximity to them we may be used to, and I think probably the after effects of COVID are that everyone wants to go out and walk and actually experience nature, and because of that we're starting to see more snakes out and about as well.
That's a very good point. The fact that the we've been through a period where the streets and outdoors has been quieter than normal, then a lot of these species and animals start to venture out because they're not there's not human beings annoying their day for them. I guess one of the main questions we're going to get, and we'll go to some text messages shortly, is: are the snakes that we see here in Dubai dangerous?
We have some incredibly venomous snakes, some of the most venomous in the world, so yes.
So, tell us which ones we should be looking out for and keeping avoiding at all costs.
I think out in, deserts and wadis, we have venomous snakes that we have are a sort of multitude of vipers. The sand, we have sand vipers, horned vipers, acorn vipers, all sorts of vipers, and sore-scaled vipers, which are incredibly poisonous. Moving now into the sort of wadi-type areas, there's a new subspecies of the sore-scaled viper being named the Oman sore-scaled viper, which we're seeing starting to be more in wadis and areas here.
Wow. And just as you mentioned wadis there as well, I guess, when you're in built-up areas in the cities, etc., and you know, in urban hubs, I guess it's uncommon to find a snake. But a situation that would be very common, I guess, is, and I do like a hike. If you're out hiking in the mountains, that is where you really do need to be careful where you're putting your feet.
It is, because it's also harder to get help from those areas. But most snakes work through vibrations, which means that if you are going out hiking, it's not just whistling a tune. Make sure you stamp your feet.
Right.
Stamping your feet will give snakes a lot more warning to get out of your way.
Yeah.
Most of them don't want to bite you. They want to move.
Sure.
But you've got to let them know where you are.
Yeah. You had a patient recently, a dog that was bitten by a snake, I believe. Tell us that story.
Yes, he was. He was actually bitten 3.5 times. When I say 3.5, he had one dry bite, so a non-poisonous bite, and then he had two proper bites on his neck and half a bite where he just got grazed by a fang but got the reaction from it.
Wow.
So he was incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
What was interesting in that instance is that the owner, while she didn't realise that her dog had been bitten, she actually managed to take a picture of the snake, and in fact a small video of the snake as well, to post a warning to people in that area. So we could actually identify the snake that had bitten her dog from that. But again, with him, he got home with a bit of a swollen face. She didn't think that much of it. She didn't put two and two together and thought it was an insect bite. The vet she went to see thought it was an insect bite as well. And it was only when he started to deteriorate that everybody put the pictures and the symptoms together, and we ended up seeing him.
And the dog made a full recovery.
He's making a full recovery, yes. I mean, he was lucky. He was probably about an hour away from death.
Wow.
We were incredibly lucky because he was bitten by one of the sore-scaled vipers, the Oman variety. And with him, it started to affect his blood clotting. So he was starting to bleed internally. He also produced fluid in his lungs, and his kidneys were starting to stop working. So he was literally dying on us. But thankfully, we got anti-venom, and we had fantastic people around him as a team who got dogs in because he needed blood transfusion. So he did incredibly well, and he should make a full recovery.
That is good news. And can I ask, was this in a built-up area, a residential area?
No, he was out walking in a wadi.
Okay, Yeah. So it's, yeah, definitely those sort of more remote places we really do need to be careful.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, this is Tom Bushell, looking after things for Helen Farmer today. We're talking snakes in Dubai. There have been more than your normal share of snake sightings around Dubai and the more remote areas of the mountains of late. We're asking why and talking to Dr. Sara as well, who has everything we need to know just to keep cautious about this. Dr. Sara, we do have a couple of texts coming in. Zina, one from Lily.
Yes, Lily said, on Tuesday morning last week, we went to the beach. We went for a swim. As we were getting into the water, we saw it. We thought it was a piece of colored rope. We realized quickly that it was a snake and it was dead. Sent a picture to my friends. They all got back to me saying it was a seriously poisonous type of snake. It's called a sea crate, and some people saying there's a spate of them at the moment.
So I guess that leads nicely on to Dr. Sara. What do we do if we come into close proximity with a snake, and if the snake has, you know, is scared that they've obviously been surprised by us human beings?
I think first thing to do if you see a snake, whether it's land or water, is to stay still first off, and then slowly try and back away. Don't move too fast, because if you scare the snake, then it may well strike at you. I mean, gut instinct is to run, but don't. Just slowly back off. If you are in a situation where you stand a chance of being bitten, whilst it might not be first thought on your mind, if you're safe to do so, try and get a photo so that the snake can be identified. And if somebody does get bitten, if you can get a photo of the snake, it will give any rescue personnel all of the information that they need to be able to treat that snake bite.
Yeah, no, good advice, absolutely. And as you say as well, uncommon in the built-up urban hub areas in the cities, if you like, but certainly you need to keep it in mind if you are going more remotely, whether that's hiking in the mountains or going, you know, camping, because, of course, these snakes, you know, I presume, are within sand dunes as well as the Rocky Mountains as well.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different snakes in different areas. I mean, one thing I'd say about built-up areas is any of the new build areas that are sort of quite sandy before they're moved into, be very careful of snakes in those buildings because there are likely to be some. But as far as snakes go, sort of mountains, say avoidance is the best thing you can do, which doesn't mean we don't go walking. But as I say, do develop your stompy feet. Make sure that you're making some noise. If you've got kids, let them throw a couple of stones just to help make a little bit of noise. Obviously not at people, but yeah, a little bit of noise goes a long way to try and keep snakes out of your safe space.
That's a really good point, especially when you are out hiking, is to stamp your feet, because it's the vibration within the ground that will tell them someone is close by. And that's, I think, you know, you often hear, you know, when hiking, drink plenty of water, you know, take, you know, tell your friends your route and things like that. But one thing that hasn't come up really is to be cautious with snakes. And as you said before, we really do have some very poisonous types of snake here in the Middle East.
Yes, we do. So, and I think the other thing to be careful of is, you know, if there are sea snakes around, most sea snakes don't want to bite you. So being bitten by sea snakes is very, very rare. Most of them can't bite through a decent wetsuit. So if it's cool enough, then you should be wearing a wetsuit. But most sea snakes, if they do bite, will actually give a neurotoxin which paralyzes you. So actually having people on hand to make sure that they're helping you out the water really does help, because that's where you will have problems there.
Wow, really good insights. Dr. Sara, the founder and veterinary director at the British Veterinary Hospital here in Dubai. Thank you so much for your insights. It's a very important message to get out there, and of course topical at the moment with a few more sightings than normal. But thank you for your time today, Dr. Sara.
That's a pleasure. Can I just put one more thing in there?
Absolutely, please do.
I was just going to say, people need to be warned as well. If a snake looks dead, please don't touch it, because it may well not be. But most snakes also have a reflex action. So if you're trying to show off and do put your hand near the mouth, then it can actually clamp down on you and envenomate, even if it's dead.
Yeah.
So stay away from dead ones too.
Yes.
They're not harmless just because they're dead.
Absolutely. A very good point. I've learned a lot in the last half an hour. Really important to know about it as well. Thank you so much, Dr. Sara. Wish you a pleasant rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai i103.8.
It's Tom Bushell looking after things for Helen Farmer today. Alongside me is Zina as well. Now, Zina, I know a lot of people around the office often say that you are a massive DIY person.
Really? Who's been saying that?
Just wanted to see your
Nobody.
Reaction. The reason I bring up DIY is we are talking about some pretty sophisticated DIY projects, and in the hopes that it will get you inspired to do some changes, perhaps to your home or maybe even your apartment. Certainly, some furniture ideas as well. On the line, I'm speaking to architect Stuart Camden, who is the man behind Camden Bureau. He makes furniture that you will not find anywhere else. Good afternoon, Stuart.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Zina. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. I've had a look at your website and some of the images that you can find online of some of the creations that you have made. Now, you're massively inspired by vehicles, aren't you? Cars and motorised vehicles, whether that be the engine or the boot, anything from a car you seem to be able to turn into a nice piece of furniture.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I am a car fan. I come from an engineering background, and as you say, I'm an architect, so I do have a bit of an eye for design. So over the last couple of years, I stepped away from architecture and started Camden Bureau, and I've been producing some, as you put it, rather interesting furniture pieces.
Yeah, tell us about that journey then. So I mean, in terms of setting up Camden Bureau, obviously your own company, how did that all come about? You say it happened a couple of years ago, but what led you to start Camden Bureau?
Yeah, well, I mean, going back to the beginning, like, as I said, I'm a British architect. I came over here in 2007, so I was here for the 2009 crisis, and that was a bit of a turbulent time. It never crossed my mind to actually start my own company. But then with the COVID issues, that was a real eye-opener, and then we had, you know, as an architect, there were clients renegotiating contracts, unable to pay for consultancy services. It was a very challenging time. So it just became a perfect time to set up on my own. So we set up Camden Bureau, and it's been great because I've been able to spend a bit more time with the kids as well, which I didn't expect, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's a great time. It's certainly a great time for people to have certainly thought about what can we do to, because we've spent so much time at home, what can we do to our house or apartment to liven it up a little bit or change it around or add some new furniture? And I think that's obviously a big topic at the moment, isn't it? DIY furniture, because we spent so much time at home. Have you found that as well? Have you been sort of pottering away at home, making your, we've got a space in the corner there, I'm going to build something for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm tinkering around. You know, I produce bottle racks, I produce coffee tables, crankshaft side tables. So I take the car, I've taken a part of a car and converted into many things. For example, one of the most popular items that we do are coffee tables. So we make them from V8, V10, V12 aluminium engine blocks. A variety of finishes ranging from, you know, untreated aluminium with natural patinas through to sandblasted and brushed, all topped with a 12mm tempered glass top. I could do bottle racks as well. So one of the popular ones there are the 2JZ, or the 2JZ as Zina would probably say it, made from cast iron 2JZ straight six engines. It's made famous by the Japanese tuning scene, primarily the Big Power Supras. We've got ones in gold, Tiffany blue, which is what the ladies seem to enjoy at the market, which was interesting because obviously my stuff is normally drawn to by the gents. Coffee tables, like I said, crankshaft side tables using 6, 8, 10 and 12 cylinder crankshafts with wood or tempered glass tops, again in a wide variety of finishes. My wife's favourite there is the V12 with a lid from a Stellenbosch red grape barrel, the original staining on the underside and the original logo scorched onto the top. So I think we may have to keep that one, but we do quite a lot.
I have to ask, with obviously everything pretty much that you're using, car parts, I mean, where do you source all of these car parts? I presume it's not a case of buying cars and then ripping them apart. I guess you go and get second-hand parts.
You would be surprised. What started it all was I picked up a Jaguar XJ8, and I could have put it back on the road with a little bit of effort, but what I decided to do was to repurpose it. So I tore it down, cut it in half, dropped in a commercial-grade charcoal grill into what was the engine bay. It was a more interesting prospect than just kind of putting the car back on the road. So that at the moment, if you have a quick look on our Camden Bureau Instagram, as you've mentioned, this is fully painted, insulated, working lights, steering, new tires, etc. It looks like it's just rolled off the production line, albeit a bit shorter. But you open the bonnet and you have a fully functioning barbecue.
Amazing.
It would look great in any garden or, you know, hotel feature, food-related event.
I love that. I have seen the barbecues, and they're really very, very good. And certainly would be an eye catcher in someone's garden. It's certainly a conversation starter, isn't it?
Absolutely. The only prerequisites there are for having the Jag barbecue is you need to have a large garden and an understanding wife, is my suggestion.
Yeah, both good points. Now, one of the reasons you're on air with us is you'd like people to obviously check out your pieces and get a little bit of, you know, people looking at that, but also collaborate with other designers as well. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the challenge for me, I'm making a product that people aren't actively searching for, but when they see it, they love it and they're really interested by it. So teaming up with like-minded designers and specifiers who are producing, you know, a more industrial-style interior or designs that emphasize the more mechanical look and feel, you know, these are the people that I'm now looking for, because I've spent the last few months producing stock, you know, wide variety of finishes, colours, etc. Mm. So now I'm big into the marketing and the promotion. So this is I'm going to finish off the year with the marketing and promotion.
Okay, perfect.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai i103.8.
Hello, this is Tom Bushell, looking after things for Helen Farmer. Sina with me in the studio as well. Right now, Stuart Camden is on the line. He's the man behind Camden Bureau. He makes furniture that you won't really find anywhere else. And he uses pieces of cars, vehicles, to make his iconic and unique pieces. Stuart, thanks for being on with us today. We've had a chat about how you created Camden Bureau and some of the pieces that you have made. And I guess we need to know where to find you. So online, first of all, where can we go? Is there a website and obviously your social media channels as well?
Yes, I mean the main site for us is Instagram. That's where we get the most activity. So Camden Bureau on Instagram. We also have our website, camdenbureau.com. Yeah, Twitter as well, LinkedIn, we're all over. But Instagram is the main focus of our efforts for social marketing.
And I have to ask, out of Zena and I have been looking at more creations of yours over the last few minutes off there. Mm-hmm. But I have to ask, what's your favourite? What have you really been proud of?
For me, I think it has to be the Jaguar barbecue that started it all, because it was such a learning curve. Yeah. And it did take a lot longer than expected, but loved it. Absolutely loved the whole process.
Am I right in thinking that the essentially the Jaguar, what do you call it? The on the bonnet, the badge.
The leaper. Yeah, they call it the leaper. Yeah,
yeah, that's your handle to lift up the hood.
Absolutely, and it's also heat sink, so yeah, you won't burn your fingers, you know, moving it. But the bonnet opens at like 170 degrees, so it's all clear of the flame and the smoke. It's a nice piece, that.
Amazing.
Nice.
How long did it take? How long did it take to get that piece done?
Slightly longer than I kind of expected, but it was worth the effort.
And so, for instance, if after this you get a call saying, five people order a Jaguar barbecue, you'd be a busy man for a few months.
I would be more than willing to take those orders. Yeah, they may have to wait a couple of weeks, but we can accommodate any requests.
Amazing.
That was what makes it fun. Yeah.
Zena, what can you see in your garden? What do you think, or home?
Oh,
is it the car seats as the sofa?
No. Stuart, please don't chop up my car. It's the only one I've got.
If somebody had a car, for example, they had an emotional connection with, and it's like, you know, past economical repair, and they wanted to keep it and repurpose it into something, this is also what we do.
Yes.
So, you know, relatives' cars, you know, they're no longer useful. We can make them into anything. Sofas. Swing chairs hung from in the garden, barbecues. We can make many things from them.
Yeah.
And aside from cars, Stuart, what if someone, you know, had another maybe gadget or device or piece of furniture that they want to, they want you to put your personal touch on it? Are you open to that? Are you exclusively working with just vehicle parts?
No, absolutely. I'm happy to talk to anybody about any project. As I said, I'm an architect. I come from an engineering background, so yeah. You know, I know what I'm doing and I know how to do it. So yeah, I'm happy to take on any challenge. You know, it's all about creating stuff, getting your hands dirty, making stuff, and seeing that product at the end of the day.
Well,
that's where I get my job satisfaction from.
They are very good creations, Stuart. Thank you for joining us on air today, and I hope you get a few new follows on Instagram, and obviously people inquiring as well. Just remind us of your Instagram account.
Is Camden Bureau.
Perfect. Perfect. Best of luck with all, Stuart, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Zina.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.